Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Psychotherapist Richard Hogan, good morning.
Good morning, Brendan.
And Richard, we often talk about how to deal with the problems and the negatives in life.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do today is a bit of positive psychology.
Sure.
We're going to discuss
how
to thrive. Before we get to that, I was talking earlier about the Liam Payne. I nearly said the Liam Payne story, like this human being, about the sad death of Liam Payne.
The tragedy, Payne. Yeah.
And then Cheryl Cole pointing out, like, everybody, like, stop, you know? Yeah. Were you watching it?
I have to be honest, yeah. I'm not that big into personally that big into celebrity and all that. I was aware of it and I heard about it and I work in schools and students talk to me about it. And I saw some of the stuff that was going on online. But I know myself, you know, a little bit about Liam Payne, kind of online activity and how he was a source of derision in some ways. But there is something inchoate in the human condition, isn't there, around idolatry and, you know, celebrity and building celebrities up and then almost this morbid fascination about their demise. Again, it's the Diana, it's the Michael Jackson, it's the Elvis, it's, you know, it goes on and on and
yeah.
on. There's something very dark in our desire around and our interest in it. And the internet, let's be honest, Brendan, it can be a terrible place, you know. This is a real human, this is a child, someone's child who died at a very young age. There's a real sense of loss and tragedy around anyone's life ending early. And then you have on top of that, for that family, people's, you know,
yeah.
obsession with it, and then the content that's been created. And we have to, as you know, consumers, we have to be, it's not just the media, it's our desire to consume it is what drives it. And so
yeah.
we have to think about that. And the word that Cheryl used there, dignity, you know, you have to give someone their dignity.
Yeah.
You know, it's terrible.
Yeah, yeah. And look, not judging. And as you say, people are people. And
we're interested in these things. Yeah.
It does feel a bit like the internet maybe like is allowing us to indulge that.
Oh, it is for sure.
Probably,
yeah.
It's probably healthier to be looking at more positive things
yeah,
too in our lives.
Absolutely.
So that's what we're going to do. So is it instead of focusing on fixing the negatives in your life, can you crowd out the negative sometimes by just focusing on positive,
yeah? You can, of course. Here's the thing, the negatives develop. None of us are born with negative thoughts about ourselves, Brendan. None of us come into this world thinking, I'm not enough. Geez, I'm not that good looking.
Yeah, there's no neurotic babies, really,
no.
is there? No.
There's a couple of parents. But, you know, there's no neurotic babies who are thinking at 2 or 3 years of age, God, I'm not as good as that baby over there. You know, it's not there. It gets programmed into us. And here's the kind of thing that when I'm working with this a lot, you know, around 6, 7 or 8, what was going on in your life there? You know, what was happening there? Where were you in the family? Where did you come in the family? What was your relationship with your primary caregiver like? What was the school saying about you? What was your siblings saying about you? And what were your friends saying about you? All of these things came together in this incredible matrix of like the story that you tell yourself about who you are. Brendan, you're sitting here now, right? And I'm sitting here and we think we're thinking, but we're running old neural circuit loops constantly.
Really, yeah.
We have 60 to 70,000 thoughts a day and 90% of those are what we thought yesterday. And yesterday's thoughts really stretch all the way back to 6, 7 or 8. So we're thinking in these familiar old habits and old patterns, but we can break them.
So disrupt. So
we have to disrupt them.
What do we mean by thriving? Or what does a person who's thriving look like?
Well, if you look at Instagram and TikTok, they'll tell you thriving is...
living your best life.
Living your best life, 24-7, doing this. You know, I watched this one thing recently and I show it to students a lot about a guy who says, to be thriving in life, you break your day down into 3 6-hour days. And by the end of the week, I've lived... kind of going, oh my God. And he's like, I listen to a novel on 5 speed as I'm jogging. I'm like, there's a nervous breakdown. The roots of a nervous breakdown.
Okay,
that's
right.
Not thriving. Thriving is about adaptability. Thriving is about openness to adventure, openness to learning, openness to people. Thriving is about growth. Really, that's what's...
Okay.
And you know what people never talk about, Brendan? I see this so clearly in my clinic. Thriving can be a really important ingredient in thriving. We might want to get to that later on. It's forgiveness.
Okay, all right, let's...
Not easily talked about, and people don't really talk about that, but a lot of the time we hold on to stuff and it really robs our vibrance and our joy. You know,
yeah.
we hold on to early things that happened in our childhood, and by God, we're not letting that person off the hook. We think to forgive is to let the person off the hook, but what we're doing is we're keeping ourselves on the hook there.
Okay.
You know, and it's...
Put it down, yeah?
Yeah.
Put it down,
let it
walk
go.
On.
Let
okay.
it go.
Okay,
yeah.
okay. you mentioned there being open and stuff, and this is a big thing, which is one of the things you say about thriving, take risks.
Yeah.
Which is hard, like. You might get embarrassed.
Calculated risks.
Okay.
Yeah, don't be so risk averse. I think we're rearing really risk averse kids, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and I hear it on the playground. If you fall from there and not bring you to hospital, you break your legs and all that. We're rearing this kind of thought about don't take risks, don't push yourself, don't go out there. Because if you go out there and take risks, by God, you mightn't get what you want. And then you fall down into this terrible place. And what I was saying to you about being adaptable and you know, resilience is another part of, you know, really thriving. So resilience is about understanding you don't always get what you go for. You know, resilience is about going for things, but knowing that you don't always land in it.
Okay, and you learn. You don't get devastated.
You don't get devastated.
You don't get the result you want.
Oh, absolutely. And this is what I see working with adults and teenagers particularly, but adults as well. They have such a fear of going for something. There's a fear of failure in it. There's like an epidemic of the fear of failure, I think, amongst our cohort of young adults now. And perfectionism and all these things. I think it's probably coming to their social media about always filtered perfect stuff, you know. They have a real fear of going for something. And because they believe if they don't go for it, then the fall will be profound there. And so they'd rather not go for it. So they'd rather stay in feeling, you know, small, and they shrink their lives down. To me, okay, that's not flourish.
Don't risk shame.
Like, yeah, exactly. The risk of like going out there is too great. So they don't. And I'm saying to them all the time, no, that's thriving. That's flourishing. Understanding that you don't always get it, but you still go for it. And then that's not failure, that's learning. And when you reframing is a really important part of thriving, because we all, who the hell gets what, everything that they want, right? You know, life isn't, you know, doesn't move in a straight line, you know, and we hear in Western ideas about thriving as success and wealth and money and all that. That's, you know, that's a very low metric to view that stuff. Life doesn't go in a straight line. It goes in the circumambulation of the self, as Carl Jung says. It goes back a bit, goes up a bit, goes back a bit, but you can see it's moving.
Okay.
And not all movement is forward, you know. And so people think if they fall backwards, oh my God, my life has collapsed. You know, I'm not where I was yesterday. It's like, no, that's, you know, we don't extract one aspect that we fell back on and say that's the whole
thing.
That's
everything. Yeah. That's back to Seligman and the positive psychology.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not all the time. Yeah. It's not everything, and it's not you. Like,
it's just life.
It's a moment.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
You were talking about kids being afraid of risk there. Were you saying you meet adolescents now in your practice who are afraid of growing up?
Yeah.
Explain that to me.
Yeah, no, that is, you know, and it's profound to see. I've seen it in the last, I think really after COVID, I've noticed this more than before COVID, you know. And when you're working clinically, you're getting like a little microcosm of society, you know. And I work in schools a lot, and I give talks a lot, and I hear it a lot, you know. Teenagers saying to me, this is what they say, Brendan. It's really hard to hear. It's like, you know, I don't want to grow up. You know, I don't want to become an adult. And I'd say, what do you see in the adult world? I get them to kind of paint it for me. Mm-hmm. And they'd say things like, you know, the responsibility, accountability, the rigidness of it, the lunches, you know, the dropping and collecting, the mortgage, the bills. They're looking ahead and they're seeing the parents.
Okay, yeah, you know exactly, what I mean? Exactly. Okay,
and
we're modeling.
That's why I'm trying to say, you know, of course we're very busy, and particularly in our 40s. We're so stretched in our 40s. It's incredible. Okay. Like, we're so stretched in our 40s.
But we're scaring the crap out of them.
Well, we have to thrive too.
Yeah.
But what's it all about if we're not? And when I say thrive, I'm not meaning that, you know, pressure on you to be thriving all the time. But we have to find moments for ourselves. We can't allow ourselves to get completely lost in this dance. It's a complicated, volatile, uncertain world that we live in. But we can't allow ourselves to get lost in the relationship and the parenting. We have to stay connected to ourselves too and who
we were. And look, there's fathers, but especially mothers all over the country going, that's grand for him to say, but like, how do you find time for yourself?
Well,
that needs to be a priority.
Absolutely. And I think underneath that, what you just said there, it's a very insightful thing, because that's what people say. And there's a premise underneath that, to find time for myself is somehow selfish. And it's not selfish. That's self-care.
Letting everyone down.
I'm letting everyone down. If my only value is in doing all of this stuff. And that's a very early narrative about you, particularly if you're the eldest daughter, but daughters in particular, you know, you're the good daughter, you're the good sister, you're the good mother, good wife. That's a really unsustainable paradigm.
That's not thriving.
That's not thriving.
Being the person who does everything. Some people do think that's thriving, don't they? Like that I'm the reliable one who does everything.
Who does everything.
I'm a human dynamo and I'm thriving.
Yeah. And I would say, generally by 47, I meet you in the clinic and you're kind of burnt out. You're absolutely burnt out. And here is an interesting thing for parents to think about. You know, 47.2 is our most unhappy year by all the science, right? But 15 for adolescence is the most unhappy time. And we generally get married around 30. And so we have a kid by 32. You can see where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
You're 47 up here and you're at, your child is 15. And you know, right there, you're both in the middle of your most unhappy time. And there's loads of conflict around that. And you kind of feel like, oh my God, I wanted this family. I wanted this happy life. And why aren't I thriving? And it's not to put pressure on you about like, you should be thriving all the time. That's TikTok and all that rubbish.
Yeah.
It's about figuring out, well, what would thriving look like?
Okay.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Okay. What would it look like for me? Because it's a subjective thing. You know, in some ways, there's ingredients that you need, but it's a subjective thing. You know, for me personally, if I was saying, when am I most thriving, if I'm being honest? Sitting down with the fire going and the kids next to me and we're watching a movie. That's when I feel like I'm really hitting the sweet
spot.
And
that's okay.
That's okay.
Yeah.
People think you need to be out there. Did you not make $1 million?
Woody Allen writing about his ex-wife. There she is now skiing down a mountain laughing like an idiot, you know, because he was too nerdy for her. She'd gone off to have a more exciting life. So so that's interesting. We do have
simplicity
to think, what does it look like for
like
me?
Your former guest Sean there, who wonderful young man there, you know, been with nature, been with birds. You know, I used to watch my grandmother feeding the birds. And I used to watch her from the kitchen window and I'd stand there for like half an hour watching her. There was a woman thriving, having the birds arrive on her hand and she was feeding them, you know. That was thriving for her.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's not this metric of like absolute success and wealth and acquisition of, it's not that at all. When I think about myself thriving, I have a charity in the Philippines. It's working with others. It's something bigger than myself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When I'm working with those, with the Bajau children, it's the most amazing thing in my life that I have in some ways, you know. And when I go there, I just feel this incredible connection to kind of like humanity. But it's something bigger than myself. There's something definitely spiritual in that relationship that I've been doing for 20 years. There's something there that's outside of myself that's bigger.
Okay.
And if we can find that, you know, if it's, you know, it might be your faith or, you know, whatever it is that you connect that's bigger than yourself, spirituality, whatever it is. That, I think, puts us into a position of like, you know, thinking less about ourselves, because neuroscience says the more we think about ourselves, the more miserable we are.
Okay.
Right. And so thoughts about self are statistically indistinguishable from negative emotions. So when we think about ourselves, you know, the selfie, TikTok, it's all self, 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 but a very superficial self. We don't thrive there in that kind of environment.
Okay, so as counterintuitive as it might seem, the best way to be selfish and look after yourself is to get into something bigger
than yourself.
Talk to yourself kindly is another one.
Oh my God! If you could cure one thing among this Homo sapiens as a species, I would say sleep. Good sleep. You've got a good night's sleep, a lot of things would be cured.
Yeah.
And how you talk to yourself. How you talk to yourself matters so much. I meet so many people in my clinic who come in and say, nothing good happens in my life. Nothing ever good happens for me. Right? And you see how the perception of the world has been negatively shaped. And so they can't see anything good coming into their life. And if it's there in front of them, they wouldn't be able to see it. And when I go through it, and I put it up on the board and I look at it and I say, you've got a family, you've got a wife, you've got a thing, you've got a job, you've got this. Is it that everything in your life is particularly bad, or are there aspects of your life that are going well? And all of a sudden you see someone kind of thinking, okay, all right, so it's not all my life that's going bad. Because when we've got low levels of resilience, we selectively abstract one thing and make it a gestalt. So we think like, you know, Brendan doesn't like me, no one likes me, you know, or I don't like this job, my whole life is terrible. But we have to get better at actually really looking at the pillars of our life and thinking, where am I doing well? Where it's not going so well, and when it's not going so well over here in this aspect of it, how do I improve that? Because one of the most profound silences I meet working clinically is when I say, what does thriving look like for you? It's a deep silence.
They don't know.
They don't know.
It's a hard one.
But you're chasing a shadow. Then when you don't really have an idea of what it is you want, you're kind of in shadow play there. And so that's always going to be unsettling and disruptive and create a disquiet in yourself. What is it that you'd like in your life? You know, what would you like to do more in your life? What would you like to have more in your life? You know, and how would you do that? How would you bring that into your life? And it's about getting a bit precise, like we've often talked here before, about getting precise about what it is you want and working towards bringing it into your life, whatever that is.
Yeah, so we have to actually strategize around it. Look, the thing is, again, people are going to say, like the people who come into your thing and go, my life's all crap. If you are stuck in a rut and you have lots of very real pressures and limitations in your life, you are going to go, that's all very well for Richard Hogan, but like, I can't, what do I have to be grateful for? And you just, you could... Like, there are a million practical reasons why people aren't able to thrive.
I've been stuck in a rut myself, you know. When you said I was definitely stuck in a rut as a 20-year-old young man, you know. I was definitely stuck there with very negative self-talk and self-limiting beliefs. And so, you know, when you do have those things, the first thing that you have to kind of think about is, well, how would I like people to speak about me, right? Because what you're saying about how do we speak to ourselves, it's such an important thing. What would I like to say about myself? And if I believed that thing that I say there, you know, would it change how I feel about myself? Because when you start to change how you feel about yourself, that for me, that was a massively important moment where I started thinking, maybe I am valuable, maybe there's more to me than this, and maybe I could achieve something in my life. And, you know, and those things really changed my kind of direction.
And that's back to changing the story you're
changing
yourself.
The story about
and
how...
And you can't, people can do that because it can seem impossible. It like seems we're locked like, into
you
narratives.
You feel like all you're running is a habit. Your thoughts are just habits. They're just thoughts. They're not real.
Okay, so
they're
how do we disrupt it? Like, is it affirmations or
no? Like as I said, you know, you've 60 or 70,000 thoughts, and 90% of those are what you thought yesterday. They won't change. They're going to stay the same way all your life unless you intentionally change them. You've got about a 10% chance of them changing organically, which is not so much. And so you're going to have to intentionally disrupt them.
So force it.
What would you like to say about yourself?
You mentioned there the pillars of life, which is interesting, and things going well in one area. And everything. What are the pillars of our lives?
Well, I suppose the big thing I think that disrupts a lot of us, and it's terrible to see it, is like your relationship with your body. There's a huge industry out there designed to make us feel terrible about ourselves, because if we feel really bad about ourselves, we're more susceptible to buying stuff, you know. And I really saw this, the first time I saw this, I was in my 20s in the Philippines. I went into a shop and I was looking to buy soap, and they all had whitening in the soap. And I was like, what the hell, where's the soap without whitening? And I went to the counter and said, do you have any whitening, soap without whitening? And they said, no. And I said, why do you have whitening in the soap? And she said, it was a meeting of cultures, and she said, all the girls want to be white. And I said, that's mad, because all the girls in Ireland want to be brown, you know. And I was meeting social construction, the construction around identity and body and all that kind of stuff. Every society is made to feel miserable for who they are. And we have to really help our daughters and our sons out of that kind of getting caught into that. And social media feeds it with these lotions and potions at a very young age around aesthetics and ideas around appearance and all that. I mean, nothing creates misery more than that kind of
stuff.
Okay,
so that's a fundamental pillar.
The biggest of all, I mean, all the research would point to this one, is this is where life meaning is ultimately found, in your relationship with your family and friends.
Okay.
Profound. That is the biggest pillar in your life. You know, and I would say we often have a rupture in our family. You know, we've talked about it here many, many times, that, you know, you come out of families, they're messy all things. They label you to reduce the complexity of it. And wherever you came in that family, oldest, middle, youngest, only child, whatever it is, that positions you in a certain way, and it keeps you going that way for your life. In some ways, it likes to keep you in that box. You're Richard the sporty one, you're Brendan the academic one. They kind of keep you there, the wild one or the messy one or the stupid one, whatever it is that the family kind of labeled you like. It sticks you into that, but you can change it. You know, you can absolutely change how people perceive you. And I would always say, you know, if there is a rupture, if you have a conflict in a family, this might be a hard thing to think about, but imagine if that conflict was healed. Imagine if that might take you to move, right? Imagine if that conflict had resolved. Where would you be then in your relationship with yourself and your family? Because we often say things like, you know, which is, say, if we're a brother, you know, Brendan, it doesn't matter to me that we're not talking. It does matter to you.
Okay.
You know,
you come back again to picturing things different.
Yeah,
we don't do, do we?
No,
we don't. Imagine, conjure up how life could be. Could be
those things. Those things are the rot wood. They simmer away in us.
No, not all human connection is as dramatic as that either.
Yeah,
like there's the baseline thing, which is that, particularly, I think, as a lot of us get older, the thing that you possibly have least time for is your human connections, in a way. So they are actually, though, the fundamental thing again, like, that we should be,
Brendan,
giving the time to. Yeah,
we have, honestly, an epidemic of loneliness in men in this country. There is no doubt about that. I see it every day in my clinic. I see men in their 40s and 50s and 30s, and actually teenagers too, across the spectrum of life, in their 70s also, struggling with their relationships, but particularly in their 40s, I would say. They've lost all their friends. They've been pursuing this career, and all of a sudden they've got nothing around them. They've no network of friendship. And they're nervous to reach out to people because of the whole stigma around seeming needy and desperate and all that kind of stuff. And they're very lonely, Brendan. And it's incredibly sad to witness that. And we just have to, because I think women are probably a bit better at being intentional with their relationships, a little bit better at their connections, and probably being a little bit better at, you know, forcing themselves to kind of go out and meet their friends and go for a coffee and all that kind of stuff. I think as men, Irish men, we're not great at that. And I think there's a lot of loneliness there.
Yeah, yeah. And when you think of thriving as well,
yeah.
Even think of when you see people are usually thriving when they're in it, a group or
yeah,
with someone else. People
yeah.
are
having the crack.
And their head isn't up their own
no,
fun
yeah.
either.
Exactly.
Like they're, yeah.
Meeting your friends and just chat with your friends and chatting about, you know, your childhood or whatever it is. That's thriving. I mean, that's meeting your friends and connecting with people and feeling connected to things.
Okay. Okay, look here. So like, I would imagine there are a lot of people thinking, but, right? I've got these specific problems.
Yeah.
This is a challenging one for you
okay.
now, but... As a disabled woman who's lived her best life but is now facing an extremely debilitating situation, can you assist with having more positive ideas or thoughts? I'm struggling at the moment, says Joan.
Yeah, and
so
Joan,
that's
a very real situation. And life, you know, people deal with really difficult experiences in life, and we have very troubling life experiences like the death of a child and all of these things. And what Joan is describing there, I suppose what I'd be trying to find there, Joan, is the pleasures in the small things. You know, that's what I would look for. Where do you, maybe if it's reading, if it's, you know, friends, someone calling over to meet you, going out for, going to the restaurant, whatever it is, that kind of just small little things, you know, because our life when we have a disability like that can obviously be restricted by just access to things and who's going to bring us out and all of that kind of stuff.
And I also think that, like some people say, oh, don't be condescending to a
yeah.
disabled person, telling them to enjoy the small things.
Yeah.
That kind of goes for all of us, doesn't
all
it?
Of us, yeah.
Like, in a way, do we in life, like, we're expecting fireworks sometimes, like, that's when I'm thriving, that's when I'm living my best life, when there's something amazing going on. But actually, to you, sitting by the fire with the kids watching the film,
that's why I gave that image. Because we do,
life is actually,
we do have this Disney
life is in the small things,
it is what do you recall, you know. What do you recall as you look back over your life? It's really the small things. It's the small things that matter to you of your life. And it's those conversations that you had with people. It's the times when people saw you and kind of saw something different than you. That's the kind of things that make you kind of thrive in life. And to Joan, again, and I think that for all of us, it's about finding something that you enjoy, whatever that is, and doing a little bit more of that. Of course, there's a real life situation coming in there and impinging on you. And that at times, unfortunately, is life. And it's going to come into all of us as we go forward.
In various ways.
In various
yeah,
ways, yeah. yeah. And I suppose a huge part of thriving in any scenario is remaining optimistic. And it's hard, of course, when there's illness and those things there. But having an optimistic mind, the alternative is having a pessimistic mind around it all. And having an optimistic mind, I have a very optimistic mind, but I'm very aware also this ends and this comes to a finale.
Are most of us kind of, maybe especially in Ireland a bit, is there a culture of, like even Johnny Sexton said in his book, right, when Andy Farrell came in and that he started talking in a really positive way, it was completely alien to all the Irish guys because this was not the default setting, like.
Yeah, I think we have that very fatalistic Irish kind of mentality, you know, don't notions. You know,
yeah,
I don't have
yeah.
notions, Brendan. Notions would be like, things work out.
Okay.
I fundamentally believe, honestly, and I say to myself, today's going to be a great day. I say those things to myself. Today's going to be a great day. Things work out. I actually say those things to myself. Today's going to be a great day. Things are going to work out. And then something tiny happens. I mean, something tiny. My daughter said something nice to me, like, there it is.
Yeah.
There was the
yeah.
greatness right there. And now I'm kind of tuning into the gratitude piece around my life. I'm not looking for someone to roll up in a BMW and go, there's your car for free. I'm not looking for that or a massive holiday. Or those are all nice things to happen, a nice holiday and all that. But I'm looking for the joy in the small little things. To me, that's kind of thriving.
So it's kind of the as-if mindset. You actually start it with your behaviour and the world will actually fall into with your mindset, the world will fall into place then because you'll see a different.
Well, the world
bunch
is just
things.
How you perceive it.
Yeah.
That's all it is. The world is the story that you tell yourself about how the world is. Your perception is how you perceive the world. If you, I mean, look at your children, they'll perceive the world completely differently. You know what I mean? The way they view things, the way they view setbacks, they'll perceive that differently. And so that's just their perception of how things are. And so we can help help ourselves with our perception. You know, our perception gets tainted as we go through life, particularly around 6, 7 or 8. But this is the greatest miracle, Brendan. This is the greatest bit of magic we're ever going to get. This is like the ultimate like experience, because we're never going to be here again. This is it. We get one chance at this 400 quadrillion to the power of 150,000. There's the odds of life. And yet here we are. We're defying all the odds to be here. And how do we spend it? More than likely saying negative things.
You're making me feel guilty. No, I'm totally wasting all this.
Well, it's not about doing
a negative spiral.
trying to understand why, because people have... This is, you know, if I was trying to underline, you know, one of the biggest paradigms that people suffer with is that if I'm not worrying, I'm going to get whacked by life.
Yeah.
If I'm not with worry, God, I'll be the happy tourist.
Around the corners, Richard.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. You get whacked by life. And I was like, well, what does worry do, really? Does it solve any future outcome? No.
Yeah.
It ruins the present. What do we have only? Right now.
So if you can do something about it, why are you worrying about it? And if you can't do anything about it, why are you worrying about it?
What's the point in doing it? Yeah, exactly.
They're sending in John McGahern quotes. We have range far and wide here, a bit from
go
driving,
but yeah,
let's stay in the flow of it. The best of life is live quietly, where nothing happens but our calm journey through the day, where change is imperceptible and the precious life is everything. I don't think all of us are going to get to that quite zen state of nothingness on it, but there's something in it, all right. Okay, so let's boil it down. So to give us a few bits of homework, so a few little the tips to take
huge
away from today.
Exactly. So if you want to change how you think, right, the most important thing, I think our thinking is the most important thing here, because that impacts on our feelings and our behaviours, right? And so if we get our thinking, if we watch that first, become more of an observer of your thoughts.
Okay.
Just think about that first of all, because we react emotionally to our thoughts, but we can observe them. I'm not that good. I'm not that nice. People don't like me. You know, I'm going to get found out. Those thoughts, right? Now, I would say, let's have a look. How do we introduce an alternative thought to that? I am good. I am worthy. I am enough, because you are enough and you are worthy, right? You are worthy. And so now what I'm saying to you is, because there's a huge neuroscience behind what I'm saying here, right?
Okay.
And so what I would do is look for 3 examples of one thing, just as homework, for 2 weeks. If you did the one, like, I am worthy. I am enough. I'm valuable. These are the things that we say the opposite of all the time to ourselves. You know,
okay.
I get found out. I'm not that good. And all those kind of things, awful things.
And you don't need to believe it. Just start saying it. Yeah?
Start saying it. But now look for 3 examples during the day where you are enough, where people gave you feedback that you are enough. Oh, there it was. You know, when someone gives you feedback or you do something, there's me being helpful, there's me being enough, there's me being valuable, whatever it is. Look for 3 examples, because all you're doing is you're trying to reorient your brain. Our brains are like default position goes towards the negative, because that keeps us alive. And so it's designed to be more negative. It's designed to kind of think the noise in the bushes is not benign, because that's, you know, about life survival and all the rest of it. And so we're thinking these negative thoughts and we haven't died yet. So our brain kind of goes, well, these are good. They keep us alive. They're not good. They don't keep us alive. They actually keep us living in this awful, murky misery. And so if you look for 3 examples of one good thought, what you're doing is neurons that fire together, wire together, you're rewiring how your brain thinks.
Okay.
That's the first thing I would say is homework.
Okay. So decide on I am worthy, I'm good enough.
Yeah, think about...
And then look for three.
And then do a little bit of journey around that. And just watch how you talk to yourself. Just watch the pessimistic launching of like fatalistic ideas about nothing good ever comes into my life. You know, nothing ever happens for me.
Okay.
Watch how you tell the story of your life.
So if people just started being more aware of that even, that would be a start, wouldn't it?
Exactly.
Listening to that.
The small thing, I had a client.
They're all there all the time. Like, and we just say, yeah, yeah.
It's funny because I had a client, just think about that, I had a client and I was saying to her about this, about getting her to rewire her brain like that. And she said to me, I said, just be a bit more of an observer of the thoughts for the next 2 weeks and I'll see you in 2 weeks. And she came back in and I said, well, what do you think? She goes, I'm a terrible moan. It's hard to thrive when someone's moaning up there all the time.
Perfect. Yeah, listen back to where we started. We give out about the internet and Twitter being a cesspool.
Exactly.
Is there any cesspool like the human brain? Your brain is an algorithm
and it's just running the same stuff all the time.
Okay. Richard Hogan, thank you very much. We'll take a break.